Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 3:45, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is Friday, August 26th, and of course being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. And it has been an eventful week, and not least because of today's events, where Janet Yellen came in and gave a very measured statement saying that the growth rate is perhaps not as fast as was anticipated, it's only 1.1%, but that the unemployment rate has stayed static, but the number of people at work has increased, suggesting that the participation rate is improving. And labor participation, of course, has been something that a number of pundits have been pointing out over the last couple of years. However, Mr. Fisher decided that wasn't enough. Then we could wonder, are the Fed chair and vice chair playing good cop, bad cop? Because Janet Yellen came with a rather dovish forecast, saying that, perhaps it's getting up to a point where we might be getting ready to once more potentially raise interest rates. But that is not what Fisher said. He said that he sees there very clear evidence that interest rates have to go higher. And of course, one of the things that the Fed is worried about is that the markets are complacent. So they're trying to unhinge that complacency without unhinging the markets entirely. So that might be part of the strategy of having this good cop, bad cop type scenario. And one would have to just ask very simple questions. Why would the Fed be raising interest rates? It isn't because we have inflation. We've certainly had asset price inflation, which is a direct result of quantitative easing. We have had inflation in healthcare and insurance costs and education costs, which are essentially services. But we have not had, so far, wage growth in any real measurable form. Now, wages broke out almost a year ago, but have not continued to move higher. Now, obviously, when you have expectations that an increasing number of cities are going to be adopting the $15 minimum wage, and perhaps they haven't given a great deal of thought beyond the populism of that decision, that it is going to push up wages for everything else, because whoever's working for $15 an hour today is going to want considerably more than that if somebody flipping burgers in McDonald's is making $15. And of course, that is where wage demands stem from. We don't get wage demands coming from a top-down scenario. It's very much from a bottom-up scenario. So these decisions to raise minimum wages are going to lift wages in the next few years. But the Fed is perfectly cognizant of this. Therefore, what they're more than likely trying to do is to avoid a bubble forming. Now, this then really is a problem, because there's plenty of evidence that they have already created a bubble in the bond markets. And when we look at the equity markets, then there is no evidence yet of a bubble, but valuations are not cheap. And corporate profits have been declining. So then with the S&P 500 breaking out to new all-time highs earlier this year, then it isn't because corporate profits are suddenly improving, but rather that there's an expectation that liquidity provision is going to exist for the foreseeable future, and that what we're going to see is that we're moving into the third psychological perception stage of a major bull market, and this is a major bull market, and that it could potentially end with the popping of a bubble. And I think the Fed probably knows that, so they are trying to act in a very measured way to withdraw the punch bowl ever so slowly. Now, when we start to talk about it, and people will say, oh, well, you know, interest rates are so very low, so this means nothing at all. That's to misunderstand leverage at its most basic, because when you take on leverage, then any move in interest rates is going to result in you having to reduce the size of your positions. And we have been in an environment for nearly 7 years, actually it's more than 7 years, that we've seen interest rates go to previously unimaginably low levels. A third of all sovereign bonds in the world are on negative yields, and this is a condition that has been created by central banks. So they most definitely have a problem in the bond markets, and there isn't a great deal of evidence yet that that problem is about to result in the bursting of a bond bubble. But there is plenty of evidence that there is a bond bubble, and then that creates a very difficult situation for investors in the bond markets, because if you believe there is a bubble and you sell too early, then you're going to underperform the market. If you attempt to short it too early, then you're going to lose money. And if you continue and persist with long positions and maintain leverage, then you'll perform at least as well as the market. But when it eventually turns, you'll probably be caught sleeping, and then you'll have an even larger loss. So they're not particularly attractive alternatives. And what we can anticipate is that when the break comes, then interest rates are going to rise, and they're going to rise fast. And that will be very much to do with the bond markets. But again, there is no evidence that it has happened just yet. We can anticipate that, and we have characterized the bull market on Wall Street as liquidity-fueled for most of the last few years. And if liquidity is impugned, or the Fed raises interest rates again, and without the justification of inflation, then that's likely to act as a headwind for the broad stock market, and not least because it will ever so slightly create a headwind in terms of the ability of companies to source debt with which to buy back shares, and or to sell debt, I should say, so that they can buy back shares, increase their dividends. But perhaps more importantly, then it helps to flatten the yield curve even more. And the US 10-year, 2-year spread has contracted from about 250 basis points in 2014 to less than 80 today. And this remains a consistent and relatively steep contraction. And it is looking likely that at some point next year, or potentially even 2018, then it will become inverted. And when it becomes inverted, that gives us a lead indicator for upwards of a year ahead of when a recession will be called. And of course, considering that you need two consecutive quarters of negative growth to declare a recession, then the inverted yield curve is usually a year ahead, but that's actually not that much time. And then we have, that's potentially a 3-year window. So if the in between now and then there is the big question whether we're going to move into a type 3 mania where valuations become extremely overvalued, or whether we move into a more rangy environment which allows some of those valuations to improve and we get to break out and move higher later. Now, this really is the big question, because it is really a question of something that we had been looking at for much of the last 7 or 8 years was that we couldn't have a secular bull market until we got over the hump of normalizing monetary policy. But there is an alternative scenario, and it is that the 7-year bull market, which could be 10 years or longer before we eventually see monetary policy normalized in more than one country, then the normalization of interest rates could in fact be the catalyst to prick a bubble or to retard a secular bull market in stocks. And there are very powerful arguments for why there should be a bull market and a secular bull market in stocks, and not least because governance is improving in major population centers. Technological innovation is advancing at a rapid pace. And the global consumer is getting access to that technology and low energy prices at a rate that we haven't had in a long time. So these are very powerful factors. The pace of technological innovation alone would create a secular bull market. The revolution that we're getting in energy, where oil prices are unlikely to sustain a move above $100 in any time in the next 20 years in the absence of a very clear geopolitical event, means that the very high oil price, energy price environment that we have been, I think, conditioned to accept since the early 2000s is over. And we can now enjoy a lengthy period of time where energy prices are no longer a headwind to economic growth. And that alone would be cause for a secular bull market. The rise of the global consumer, where we're going to have an additional 2 billion people entering the global economy in the next 20 years, and that the majority of those people are going to be in Asia and Africa, and we are starting to see that governance is improving in the major population centers, then that's also the potential cause for a secular bull market. But these are secondary considerations relative to the monetary policy that is fueling the liquidity that's flowing into these themes. Because without the liquidity, you don't get the bull market. And we've been going through this period of time where we have extraordinary monetary accommodation. So this good cop, bad cop routine that Yellen and Fisher are playing weighed on stock market, weighed on Wall Street today. But the yen, which has been so very strong for much of this year, well, it pulled back again from that 100 level, and the Nikkei futures unwound all of yesterday's decline. If we get additional upside follow through for the dollar, then that's likely to translate into the Nikkei breaking the medium-term progression of lower rally highs and at least advancing in nominal terms. It's a very similar story for Europe. The euro has been locked in this range between 105 and 115 for 14 months, and it's right now right in the middle of that range, but the euro pulled back, or the dollar strengthened today, and that unwound all of the move from last week. So the Europeans would dearly like a weaker currency. And there's still some evidence that the US would perhaps not like to see the dollar index breaking above 100. And yet, if the Fed is indeed going to raise interest rates, that is going to widen out the interest rate differential. And, you know, they do say that analyzing the currency markets is a difficult scenario because there are no real hard fundamentals to monitor, but interest rate differentials are perhaps the only real fundamental in the currency markets, and they are widening in favor of the US dollar, and the US economy has got some very real strengths relative to the rest of the world, and not least because of the energy revolution and technological innovation. So there are good reasons for why the dollar should be stronger, but that is likely to weigh on the equity markets. So when we look around, then the chances are that in the next few months that we're going to have some consolidation. And very short term, it's looking likely that we're going to get a reversion to the mean on Wall Street. Then it's a big question whether the index finds support in the region of the moving average. But that's less than a 5% pullback from where we are right now, which in the greater scheme of things is really hardly worth mentioning. Provided it holds the region of the 200-day moving average, we could give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And a couple of the things that could potentially happen is that maybe the Fed is right. Maybe the US economy is a bit stronger than many people think. Maybe that could translate into additional productivity growth or the resurgence of spending. But these are big asks, and we don't have a great deal of evidence to support the contention that consumer spending is about to explode on the upside. There really is still an awful lot of debt out there, and a 35-year bull market in bonds, when it eventually bursts, it is going to create, one way to think about it is going to create some great challenges, but it's also going to create some wonderful buying opportunities. But between now and then, the likelihood is that we're still in an overall bull market environment, because obviously everyone is concentrating on what the Federal Reserve is going to do. But the ECB is printing, the Bank of England is printing, the Bank of Japan is printing, the People's Bank of China is printing. There is the very real possibility that the US will engage in fiscal stimulus. The Europeans need fiscal stimulus. Mario Draghi has been very vocal in calling for fiscal stimulus. The UK is going to engage in fiscal stimulus. Japan has already engaged in fiscal stimulus, and so has China. So there is unlikely to be a shortage of liquidity. And I've posted today a link to the Swiss National Bank's portfolio of US shares. It's listed on the NASDAQ website. And they printed $60 billion worth of currency so that they could buy shares. Now, that's, I would consider, a sensible move in the category of that countries don't have friends, they have interests. And it is in the interests of the Swiss National Bank to look after the interests of its citizenry. Well, it makes sense that in a very low interest rate environment where you have such a large number of sovereign bonds with negative yields, that a central bank would attempt to accumulate assets and can easily do so by printing currency. And there doesn't seem to be any obstacle to doing that because investors are snapping up these bonds. And what do central banks buy? Well, generally they will either buy gold or they create sovereign wealth funds, and they buy stocks or they buy property. And that makes sense because that gives them the ownership and the rights to future cash flows. And the kinds of assets that they buy are those that have got a proven success rates of surviving both in good and bad times. So central banks are hedging their bets. They know that they have created a very difficult environment that they're going to have. Let's think about it the other way. That having created such a huge amount of money, are they going to leave it in the system indefinitely, or are they going to normalize interest rates? because you can't really do both. Because if all that debt is still outstanding, then debt eventually matures and most debt is refinanced. But if you raise interest rates, then you won't be able to afford to refinance all that debt. So this represents rather a quandary. And something that they could do, of course, is to just simply cancel the debt. That if one arm of the government owes the other arm of the government money, that they could simply agree to cancel the debt. And that would, I think, make sense. The other thing, of course, that they could do is attempt to inflate their way out of trouble. But that also creates a problem with refinancing, because their ability to refinance such large quantities of debt would be heavily, well, the higher interest rates would be really quite an enormous obstacle. So there's going to have to be some sort of way of dispensing with all of this debt. And it is in the interest of central banks to try and do that without having another crisis. So gold prices have been pulling back most of this week, and they pulled back particularly firmly, or strongly, I should say, on Wednesday. But this represents a mean reversion. When you have just about every central bank, with one notable exception, engaged in quantitative easing and printing money, then there is a good reason to be looking at gold and precious metal prices from a bullish perspective, and they're characteristically volatile, and nothing has happened to change that particular condition, but they are now coming back into a potential area of support, so it is increasingly looking like an area where one should be starting to get interested once more. And that is, I think, the best way to look at many of the these kinds of assets, that they are best bought following mean reversions. And when something gets way overextended, and we know that a lot of good news has already been priced in, then it is time to begin to at least to start thinking about taking profits, so that you are not continuing to increase the size of the position into an accelerating market. So, and that, I think, is as true today of the bond market as it was of any equity ever, or indeed any commodity ever. When we take the big step back and we look at where are we in the big picture, then we're 7 years into a very impressive bull market on Wall Street. And we know that there is a big obstacle in terms of normalization of interest rates. But the normalization of interest rates is a double-edged sword, because what it does is that it will, on the one hand, challenge the leverage-fueled or liquidity-fueled growth model, but then it will also create an incentive to increase dividends and pay savers. So then there is the real possibility that in an environment where interest rates are higher and inflation is higher, that stocks become more attractive because they have the ability to raise their dividends, and you just don't get that with fixed securities. And because we have these three big macro secular bull market themes, then these aren't themes that are likely to expire in the short term, but rather that they're going to be fundamental drivers for many years to come. And then if we put that in context, that the eventual normalization of interest rates, the eventual change could simply act as a road or a speed bump for equities. And of course, there is an alternative. And the alternative is that we don't get the normalization of interest rates, that the Fed is making a mistake, that the US economy is not able to grow, that everywhere else is going to double down on quantitative easing, that we're going to have at least a couple of countries move into a helicopter mode, that they're going to realize that negative interest rates don't work, that they're inherently deflationary, and they go the whole hog and start dropping money from the sky. And if that is in fact the case, then they will get the inflation that they've wanted. The quantity of debt that they have will be inflated away before it has to be refinanced. And then we will move into a clear bubble phase for risk assets. Because the one thing we know is a clear result from quantitative easing is asset price inflation. And that would drive us hell for leather into the third psychological perception stage. And because we're really only at the upper side of a range that's been in evidence now for a year and a half, and we can still have this discussion. We can still talk about what are the possibilities, because we haven't yet seen that breakout fail, or we haven't seen it reasserted on the upside. And there is that indecision, and that is what a range is. A range is a period of time where there is indecision in the market, but I think we are getting increasingly close to a point in time where that indecision is going to be resolved. And whatever about the Fed very, very gradually raising interest rates, there is no prospect of the UK, the euro, the eurozone, Japan or China aggressively raising interest rates anytime soon. And that would suggest that the potential for additional massive monetary accommodation is perhaps the base case, in which case we can anticipate that there will be a mania develop in another market other than bonds, and that the bull market in bonds may persist a while longer and get even more ridiculously overvalued. But the only thing that we can do is to pay attention to the price action, monitor the consistency of trends, and clearly ask whether we see evidence of type 1, type 2, or type 3 trend endings, and indeed trend beginnings. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend, and I wish all the best to all of you.